This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows, and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
This is Mason Vera Payne, live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Contributing editor at Fandango, Eric Davis, is going to join me to talk about entertainment news and movies that you should check out during the holiday. Thanks for joining me, Eric.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Before we get into upcoming movies, I have to know, what did you think about Venom? Because I'm on the edge here. Is it good? Is it bad?
I think that Venom gives a good college effort. I think there's some of it that I wasn't crazy about. But I think for the fans, they seem to really like it. It's sort of one of those so bad it's good kind of movies is the vibe that I'm getting. A lot of fans really liked it. They love to see sort of this interpretation of Venom. A lot of the movie really does sort of pay homage to the comics. And so I think that the fans definitely got a Venom movie that they appreciated critically. I don't think critics liked it. I think, it's not as good as previous superhero movies that we've seen, but it is interesting to sort of see this trending towards anti-heroes as your main character. That's something that we're seeing with Deadpool. We saw it with the Wolverine movie. We're seeing it with Venom. And we're just seeing more movies that sort of center on a anti-hero versus a straight-up hero. And I think that is what's interesting to me, and seeing how well Venom performed leads me to believe that we'll definitely get a sequel, but also that we're going to see more movies anti-heroes.
Now, the thing when it comes to Venom is that he was an actual bad guy for Spider-Man. Why do you think that they didn't try to incorporate it into this movie, or were they just trying to do standalone?
Well, I think they were trying to do a standalone. I also think that there are certain rights issues now because it's complicated. Sony Pictures, who put out the Spider, they have the film rights to Spider-Man. However, they have entered into an agreement with Marvel Studios that Marvel Studios can use a live-action Spider-Man in their movies. And so I think that while that agreement is in place, I don't know if it necessarily allows Sony to go and do their own live-action Spider-Man, because it may complicate the appearance of the character. And so instead, they have an animated Spider-Man movie that's coming out called Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And if you stay through the credits of Venom, you will see them talk about that a little bit. And so they can do an animated version of Spider-Man, but they can't really touch a live action. And so I think, once you put Spider-Man in a Venom movie, it becomes another Spider-Man movie. And I think that they just kind of wanted to separate Venom from Spider-Man in order to kind of build out that character's own sort of cinematic filmography, so to speak, and begin there. It's not to say that we won't eventually see Spider-Man with Venom, but I think they wanted to kind of start him off by himself without the pressures of having to have Spider-Man around as well.
Hmm. All right, I give you that. There's another movie that I'm a little bit surprised did well, was Halloween the Reboot. What did you think of that one?
I really liked the Halloween. It's more of like a sequel to the original movie, and I really like how they did it that way. I thought that it was unique. It's the kind of movie that gave fans what they wanted, and it knows what it is as well. And so you have a lot of homages to the other Halloween movies, especially to the original John Carpenter version. But they kind of come back 40 years later, and there are some scenes in it where it's very funny, and then it's a little bit creepy, and then it's super scary. But I think the film gives you everything that you want to have in a slasher movie. But it's also interesting, too, I think that, slasher movies were a big deal in the 80s. And today's audiences, slasher films are a little too simple for them. I think they want a bit more complexity with their horror movies. And so we're seeing a bit of a divisiveness on Halloween where it's not enough for some people. But for some people who grew up with slasher films, they really do appreciate sort of the format of it, and they know what to expect in it. And so I think that they did a good job with it. I dug it a lot.
In the past Halloween, they almost had like a supernatural kind of foundation. And in this case, I don't think they went with the supernatural Michael Myers. They went more with like suspenseful, actual, trying to engage it more as a person, you know, instead of this weird supernatural guy. And Do you think that with that kind of formula, they're going to be able to have a sequel?
I spoke to the director on a couple of occasions about this film, and he definitely thinks that, you know, Michael Myers is a character that can always return. And it's just about how you figure out a way to make him return. But I agree. I liked how it wasn't so supernatural, how he was just kind of a guy that went on this murderous rampage 40 years ago, and now he's just returning to kill some more. So I dug that aspect of it. But, you know, I think that you can always find ways to resurrect Michael Myers, and I think it just comes about finding that access point. You know, I think they did a really good job in terms of bringing out this movie and getting people excited about it. And I think they have to do something similar. And so what they do next will really sort of define the longevity of what this new version of Halloween is.
You know what would be interesting is that instead of bringing back the original Michael Myers, it's a copycat Michael Myers. I think that would be a good spin on it.
I think that would be a great spin on it, and it's something that I could totally see happening.
Because if they bring him back, it's going to get that supernatural feeling again, and I think they're going to go right back into exactly where they were before.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends. You know, I'm careful because I don't want to spoil the end of this movie. But the last shot, leaves it up to the imagination of where Michael Myers is or isn't. So that's kind of where we are.
Now, jumping to another oldie but goodie is Child's Play. Have you heard anything about this? I heard they were rebooting it.
They are rebooting it. We actually just had a writer that visited the set of it in Vancouver. And so it is happening. They just released a teaser poster yesterday for it, and it's coming out June 21st, I think. Of next year. So it's happening. Aubrey Plaza is in it. I feel like it's one of those things where we may get there's more humor in it. Maybe it's more accessible. But this is another case where here you have this iconic horror series. What can you do? How do you modernize it? How do you change it so that today's audiences sort of find a new appreciation of it, but also it pays homage to what we've seen before? So, you know, it's another thing where it's a killer doll. And so how is that enough for audiences? What else can you add to it?
Okay, so back in June, there was teasers. There was going to be a Child's Play TV show. Are they still going to do it, or they're going to do it in conjunction with the movie, or is the movie going to be it, and they're not going to do the TV show? Do you know anything about that?
I don't know much about it, but I know that there is the movie in the works. And I think, you know, a lot of these times we've seen some other properties that have wanted to do the movie and the TV show, and the last one was The Dark Tower that came out. That was a very ambitious Stephen King adaptation. They wanted to kind of do a film and then a TV show and then another film. And so you always have these ambitious sort of concepts, but I think you need the audience to buy in. You know, you need the audience to really be invested in sort of following the property across its mediums. And I think it's about finding that property that people are invested in. You know, it's interesting to see what Marvel and Disney are doing with their new Disney streaming service. Is they're going to take some of these characters that we've seen in Marvel movies like Loki and the Winter Soldier, and they're kind of turning them into, giving them their own streaming series on Disney Plus is what it's going to be called. It's going to be launched towards the end of next year. And so it's going to be interesting to see how fans sort of consume those series. You know, when you take Tom Hiddleston off of the big screen and you put him in a series on streaming, on a streaming service as Loki, is that going to have the same impact that it did on the big screen? And so I think that's going to be a big test to see the crossover appeal of these sorts of properties. You know, so do they just belong on the big screen, or will the audiences follow it to the small screen?
That is so true, and it sometimes can be too much. And in this case with Child's Play, I wonder if it's going to be two different, like, realities, only because the TV series is going to be following the movie Cult of Chucky. And then the movie that's coming out in 2019, that's going to be just a remake of the first Chucky. So this could be two different realities. I wonder if people would be willing to follow, like, almost two different stories.
Yeah, pretty much, you know. And I think with these kinds of things, it just depends on the tone and how they approach it. You know, I think horror on TV is tricky. Because sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. In the last few years, I can really only think of a couple of sort of horror-specific properties that have been successful on television. You know, there is The Walking Dead. There is this new Netflix series, House on Haunted Hill. And beyond that, you know, there was the, to certain success, there was the Psycho prequel series that had, you know, a little bit of fanfare. But in terms of, like, sort of just mass audiences loving it and it really infiltrating pop culture, there hasn't been a lot. And so I think it's going to take the show will have to, you know, there's an Exorcist show that kind of floundered. So I think they're going to have to do some work on it for it to really penetrate pop culture and become a thing, you know. And if it doesn't do that, it's just going to kind of maybe put out a couple of seasons and then go away.
Okay, we're not done with the 80s horror genre, because I heard that they're making a Shining sequel. Did you hear this one?
They are. It's called Dr. Sleep. It's actually based on a book that Stephen King wrote. And yeah, they're making this right now. We're actually going to visit the set of it in Atlanta. And it's Ewan McGregor is in it, I believe, and Rebecca Ferguson, and McGregor is going to play the grown-up Danny Torrance. You know, Danny is the, if you remember Stanley Kubrick's Shining, he is the little boy in the movie, and so that boy has grown up, and what kind of demons have followed him, and I think that's sort of where this film picks up, and it'll be interesting. I'm really curious. A guy by the name of Mike Flanagan, who I believe is the guy that did The House on Haunted Hill, I want to say, or was involved in it. He is directing the film. I think he's a great up-and-coming horror director, and so I'm curious to see, you know, how much of this movie will be its own kind of thing, how much of it will feel like the original Stanley Kubrick movie. You know, you always have to be careful when you're making a sequel to a film that has such a specific kind of feel to it in terms of its direction. You know, you have to balance that in paying homage to what that, the sense of dread that was in that, but then also modernizing it and creating your own thing. And so I think they did a really good job with the It movie in terms of Stephen King adaptations. There's another one coming out, Pet Sematary is coming out in April. That's another one I'm really curious to see. So I think that, you know, you have to find that line, and you have to balance the modernizing it for today's audiences while also staying true to what the property is and what people expect from it. So if they can kind of toe that line, I think they'll have success for it. But right now we're in sort of peak Stephen King adaptation with It, and there's a sequel to that coming out, It Chapter 2, and we have Pet Sematary and now Dr. Sleep. And so I think right now is just there's an appetite to see sort of inventive adaptations of Stephen King's work, and so you know, I welcome it. I'm real curious to see how it is.
You're right about being curious, because when it comes to The Shining, for me, looking back at it, it was more of a psychological thriller. It was a lot of internal demons that was happening in conjunction, obviously, with the hauntings. And this movie, The Doctor Sleep, I'm curious to see, will they go in that same direction? Or is this going to be gory jump scares?
You know, I don't know. I'm just as curious as you are. I did not read it, so I'm not as familiar with the story. So I imagine it'll be a little bit of a mix. You know, I think The Shining definitely gives you that. It leans more into the sense of dread than it does the gore. I mean, there are moments in The Shining that are a bit creepy to look at, and so I imagine that will be the case here. Stephen King isn't necessarily a gory writer, or his films aren't very gory. I think they are more about that building dread that's in it, you know, than they are about sort of the gore factor. And so I imagine we may get a little bit, but I don't expect it to lean heavily in the gory direction. I think it's going to be more of a dreadful movie, if anything.
Now, with all these 80s reboots, all these throwbacks, when are we going to see a new Elm Street? Do you think that's going to happen soon?
Well, I mean, I think to see how successful the resurrection of Michael Myers was leads me to believe that they will take another look at Freddy and Jason, too, you know, from Friday the 13th and say, hey, you know, Michael Myers was able to do this. Can we do this with Freddy? Can we do that with Jason? You know, I've always thought reinventing the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise is something that is easier to do than a Michael Myers or a Jason. You know, Michael Myers and Jason, they just kind of follow people and kill them. And, you know, it's not as exciting, especially for today's audiences. But Freddy, the fact that he sort of operates in this dream landscape, I think is just ripe, especially with today's technology. It's just ripe for a really inventive take. You know, they tried to kind of reboot it a few years ago to limited success, but I think if they got the right sort of creators and the right minds behind it, I think there's a lot you can do with Freddy. You know, of course, you have, unlike Jason and Michael, you know, Freddy, you know, is iconically played by Robert Englund, and so part of it is casting a new Freddy that separates from you know, Robert Englund. And then another part of it is in terms of sort of reinventing it in a way that's cool and that people are into, you know. And so I think that is a property that leans a little bit more into the gore, the gory area. And so I'm down for it, but I think that the popularity of Michael Myers right now with Halloween, I think will definitely inspire some takes, at least on Freddy and Jason. Whether or not they'll come to fruition, we'll have to see. But I definitely think the wheels are turning in terms of those classic characters. I wouldn't be surprised if we get an announcement at some point that a script is being written or something like that.
Now, talking about classic characters, I keep hearing about a Hansel and Gretel, a retelling, like in a horror aspect. Have you heard this?
I've heard rumblings. Well, we had that Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters that came out not too long ago with Jeremy Renner. And that was sort of like a horror movie. Like, I remember it was like R-rated, and it was like a grown-up Hansel and Gretel, and they hunted witches. And so, you know, there's always going to be rumblings. You know, the one of the great wells that Hollywood likes to go to are to those classic fairy tales, because, you know, the originals are creepy. You know, some of them have been Disney-fied over the years, and so people don't even remember, you know, what the original was like, what the original Snow White, or what, you know, what the original sort of was. But a lot of those, you know, classic sort of stories have a lot of horror elements in them, and so that's why I think we've seen sort of, you know, some of these retellings that are more true to the original text. Hansel and Gretel is one of those. And so it wouldn't surprise me if something was in the works. Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters didn't do as good, but we'll see how they decide to approach it this time around. It's always difficult when you have a property that is known as a kid's property, and then you're going to say, no, we're going to make it an R-rated horror movie. You know, who's your audience? You know what I'm saying? You have to sort of find now a new audience for it, and so I think that it'll be interesting to see. I'd almost rather see a more family-friendly version of Hansel and Gretel that you know, is a bit creepy, that leans on the horror side, but is a little bit more more family-friendly than an adult-oriented version.
You know, it would be nice if they even did, like, I don't know, a point of view from the parents trying to find the kids.
Yeah, that would be cool. Like, sort of like a missing kids version of Hansel and Gretel would be interesting. And then so you have these parents that are trying to, you know, a more grounded sort of real world. What if these kids just disappeared? What would that look like? And then, you know, then you have these kids that are sort of trying to survive in this witch's lair. So it might be interesting to see something like that.
Now something
you have some good, you have good takes, Mason. You should write some of these.
Yeah, you know, I love supernatural and horror and fantasy, but I would love to see more in a modern setting because it's already been done. We've seen you know, the castle, the missing, you know, princesses. We've seen it all, but I want to see more modern stuff. You know, if the parents are trying to find the kids and instead of it being witches, it could be something like a weird neighbor has the kids and they have to get through the house, you know?
Yeah.
It would be really cool, I think.
Yeah, I just think like more grounded tellings make it immediately more relatable.
Absolutely.
And so the more relatable the situation is to people, the more they can place themselves in it, and the more fear that you eventually get out of them because they could see this completely happening in their world. And so I definitely agree.
Now there is a movie that I have been waiting for. It's Black Widow. Have you heard anything about like any rumblings on this one?
Well, I've heard that it's happening. I've heard that they've announced it. There's rumors that it'll be a May 2020 release, but we haven't. I don't believe they've announced the release date for it. But those are the rumors, and it's exciting. You know, I think following Captain Marvel, it's great to see Marvel Studios sort of taking more approaches in terms of female-centric films. You know, we've seen Black Widow a lot now. So what are they going to do to sort of advance her story? But I think she's an interesting character, and I'm all for it. I'm just curious to see what they do with her story. And it's something that fans have asked for a long time. But how do they kind of connect the dots? And, you know, once we get past this next Avengers film, it's going to be a whole new kind of storyline, I imagine. And so what kind of Black Widow are we getting is what I'm interested in the most. So we'll see, you know. But Scarlett Johansson does a great job with the role. I like how she's just a woman who's just kind of like a badass assassin. I like that about it. She doesn't have special powers. She's not like a god or a super soldier. You know, she's just her, and she just knows how to fight, and she fights all the way to the death. And so I think that's exciting. It's exciting to see a Marvel hero who's just like a regular person and is just kind of like an assassin, and I like that aspect of it. So I expect the movie to have really cool fight scenes in it.
Now, this is a movie that I'm really looking forward to seeing, is Nutcracker in the Four Realms. I'm hoping, did you see this one already? Could you tell me, is it worth it or no?
I think it's worth it if you're a fan of the Nutcracker story and if you're a fan of the music. I think visually it's spectacular. You know, Disney really does a great job creating these visual kind of adventures, and that's what they do here. So I think that, you know, if you're a fan of the Nutcracker, you'll like it, and it'll help you sort of get ready for the holiday season. I think if you're not such a Nutcracker fan, but you want to get ready for the holiday season, there's also The Grinch, which is out, which is a safe, fun retelling of the Grinch story. That it's a short movie, so if you have really young kids, I think The Grinch would work for them. I think you have a little bit older kids, I think The Nutcracker would work for them.
Okay, now with The Nutcracker, this isn't going to be like a four-part series. It starts the movie, and the movie ends, and then that's it, right?
You know, and the film did not open up with huge numbers, and so I do not see it being a four-part series. I think we've had something like 20 versions of the Nutcracker over the years. You know, it's just something that they just keep making again and again. This is probably the most visually spectacular version of Nutcracker that we've seen. But yeah, you don't have to worry about going in and then now having to be invested in another 5 Nutcracker movies. I think this is pretty much it.
Just checking. You never know. They kind of like to squeeze you of all your money when it comes to movies.
Yeah, I mean, if it opened up to like $80 million, I'm sure we would see another Nutcracker. But it did not open that way, so I do not see us seeing another one.
Now, besides the Nutcracker and the Grinch, are there any other movies that we should be checking out around the Thanksgiving holiday?
I'm excited for the sequel to Creed. If you're a Rocky fan, I think this is a really cool sequel. I love the first Creed with Michael B. Jordan and Tessa Thompson and Sylvester Stallone. The three of them are back this time. It's sort of a pickup on Rocky IV, if you remember that one, where Rocky fought the Russian Ivan Drago. Well, this time, Ivan Drago has a son, and he's looking to sort of exact some revenge against Rocky. And so now Creed is faced against Drago's son, you know, and of course Drago killed his father in the ring. So there's a lot of personal stories at stake in this film, and I really think they did a great job sort of reinventing the Rocky franchise through the young Apollo Creed's son, and I'm really excited about that film. If you're a mom and a dad, you have another Wreck-It Ralph movie, Ralph Breaks the Internet, which is Disney Animation. Lovely film, lots of heart, lots of internet references. So if you have kids, especially right now, if they're on YouTube and, you know, they're familiar with the internet, I think they'll find a lot of relatable humor in that one.
Thanks, Eric, for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
You could always find me over at Fandango with lots of interviews. And then if you want to follow me daily, I recommend Twitter, at Eric Davis, Eric with a K. And you could follow all of my movie-going exploits.
This has been The Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.